Hey, and welcome to the Disability Podcast, the podcast where we talk about tips, tricks, and everything disability. So let's not waste any time and get right into this episode of the podcast. Welcome back to the Disability Podcast, and today we have Douglas on this episode. And because I don't really like talking about, you know, their problems themselves or their disabilities, I'm going to let Douglas jump right into it and explain a little bit about himself.
Excellent. I live in Illinois. I am a disabled veteran, and I invented a knife that helps myself, helps my own issues. And that was really my window to disability. I think that understanding those issues help you accept them. And my personal issues are mostly, well, I should say they're kind of all over, defined and recognized by the military as service disabled. And that's something in the world of military disability in the US, they'll categorize whether they made you disabled or whether it was something that you did yourself. So I've got a host of issues from my knees and ankles to my respiratory system, where they did surgery that didn't take, but that results in major headaches, migraines, apnea, and things like that. And then my upper body is actually the worst, but not generally accepted by the military as stuff that was service disabled. And that's shoulder. I had my shoulder rebuilt, but I still have some issues. But elbow, tennis elbow, all of that stuff, arthritis, carpal tunnel, which are all disabilities, right? You and I were talking before we started where I'm no different than anybody else. I just have accepted the limitations that age and bad decisions or good decisions, whichever the case may be, have put me in terms of my capabilities.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it is, we were talking about it earlier, that everyone kind of has something. They might not realize it. And also, small compounding things like tennis elbow, like you just said, plus all the other things, does cause larger problems in the day to day. So what really made you choose to design and then,
you know, it's interesting. It wasn't as much a choice as I like to solve problems. I look back at my military time and all that, and problems are meant to be solved. And my problem at the time was I was a hobbyist knife maker. My wife had gotten me a class on how to knife smith. And when we moved to where I live now, I set up a whole forge, but my shoulder, this was right before I had total shoulder reconstruction. And I was in a lot of pain. I couldn't even lift my arm. So I couldn't swing a hammer, and I like to cook and I couldn't cook. So the nice part about knife smithing is you can make some knives without having to swing a hammer, but it created a problem that needed to be solved by what I had learned in knife making. So if I wanted to cook up until the point when I'm healed up, and that's 18 months after you get shoulder surgery, and with it still I had arthritis and carpal tunnel and grip issues. I had a boxer's fracture at one point. The shoulder fixed some things, it didn't fix everything. So it was less a choice than inspiration of looking at, you know, I'm like any guy who makes things. I have all sorts of stuff to my wife's dismay in my garage that I use for prototyping and all that. But I feel it's important to have this stuff around, because what drew me to designing a disabled knife was looking and saying, okay, I have the problem. I can fix it. How can I fix it? And there was a circular saw blade. And when I prototype, I don't like to use the best steel. I think it's wasteful, because if you end up with something bad, you know, you waste a good steel. So I have a lot of junk around, but there was a circular saw blade that I was able to turn into sort of the first design, which was a modified Ulu design. And the Ulu is an Inuit knife that was the everything knife, the female tribe members had that as the knife that they skinned and prepared food and cut hair. It was this really utilitarian knife that is just very, very efficient, but not as efficient as it could be. So that's to when I started looking, saying, well, how can we make it better for a specific task of working the kitchen, as opposed to optimized for everything. And that's what really drew me to it. And that was sort of the first blow that brought me in to the world of disability. But when we rolled the knife out in June of last year, we did it, as luck would have it, we got our first inventory around the time there was a disabilities expo in the Chicago area, where families and disabled people and just everybody associated with the industry come out, and we unveiled it at that event. And as I said, I'm disabled, but with tweaks and things like that, I can generally get by. There were some really profoundly disabled people there who, for them, the multitude of tasks that they had to accomplish in a day, those layered created a higher level of disability. And those folks embraced the knife. And when I designed it around upper body issues, because I don't have to sit in a wheelchair. I don't have to sit down. I have knee and ankle problems, but not to the extent that I can't stand in the kitchen and prepare a meal. But there were people in wheelchairs. Yes. There were people who were vision impaired. And all of them accepted and really found things about the Nulu that worked for them. The vision impaired folks found that when you line it up, it's perfectly aligned with your muscular skeletal structure. For them, they know where the blade is. It's a better option for them. It's safer. And it's just a more efficient way to cut. For people who are sitting, because of this is where we're really patent pending, is this heel blade that gives us 160 degrees of cutting. The people who were sitting would cut in a to them, and they were engaging their core in a way we hadn't expected. So that's when I looked and I said, wow, this just lark that I created in my garage has the ability to change a lot of people's lives. And at that event, there were families that bought it. And as I watched them walking away joking with the usually disabled young adult, they were joking about, now you have to help in the kitchen, and laughing, and something that I have to kick my kids in the ass to do, for these people meant normalcy, and my product was giving them that. And I hate to use the word normalcy, but if you define normalcy as being able to do some of these tasks, then it is a normal thing. So it's not normal. It's not a matter of normal being able to do it. It's a matter of being able to be normal by being able to do it with some help. And I was hooked. And a funny story, when you ask about how we pivoted to the disabled market, we started there. And then over the last year, there've been a lot of people say, oh, you should be mass market. You should be selling here. And you want to be that, right? I want to be the cool knife. And we've done a 360 pivot back as we're rolling, you know, into the beginning of 2026, to say, no, we squarely belong in the disabled space. But what our job now is to better communicate to people and have them understand that we're all disabled, or we all will be.
Yeah.
And that it isn't a state of being, it's a path that you walk.
So from my experiences, the knife that I have over here, because I have hemiplegia, so I can only use one hand. It's like a perpendicular, so the handle is perpendicular to the blade.
Yep.
And it's basically,
when you use this, if you use it this way, that's why we put this blade that way, is because you can do a hammer type movement. So I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, I mean, so that knife, I know about 50 ways I'd be able to make my life a lot more easier. But the problem that we have over here is there are very few products, and the products that do solve the situations or make our lives easier, they're very hard to get hold of, or they're out of stock, or, you know, there's just problems. And it's also, I'm not sure if you know this, but in the UK, all products designed for disabilities are via value added tax exempt.
Wait, so they charge you more for them?
Well, no. So you did it basically 20% you get it 20% off because the government doesn't charge the company.
Oh, okay, so it's the opposite. So because it's a beneficial item, they get rid of the tax on it. So you basically get the tax free.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I didn't know that.
But then you can also just sell it to everyone with the normal tax. So, but no one knows this. I know this because I do my research. But it's also, I think, it's companies like yours. I think you're selling independence.
We are totally selling independence. I love that. And there's an interesting, and by the way, one of my other issues is ADD. So if I cut you off, I'm so sorry. But I was a caretaker for the last 3 years of my dad's life. So I saw him at 80, he died at 89. And that was a real window into loss of independence. And that really, really imprinted on me about that. And that was a little bit of what I was talking about. When you can, you know, the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Independence means that you can, at a minimum, accomplish these at some level. And I do love the fact that this means that either somebody can do what they want to longer, or even better, someone can do something that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. And it's interesting what you say about the UK versus here, because here I feel that there still isn't enough on universal design. And the lessons of business are very interesting, that universal design, when done right, helps the adaptive space first for proof of concept, commercialization, but can make it into the regular commerce space, right? I was watching a show the other day, and they were talking about the birth of technology and smartphones and the multi-touch on a phone. That was a disabled product. That was a product that was designed around people who could not use traditional mouse keyboard. So this multi-touch, that was an adaptive product. And now today, people wouldn't say, well, this is a great product that found its way to the ether on people who needed it. And that's the frustrating thing, is we're bootstrapping this product. But even here in the U.S., where you would think that you could find a family office or an investor who has a connection to MS, Parkinson's, arthritis, you name it, that would say, hey, I'm going to write a check that's not going to be a unicorn type investment, but I know that this is creating impact in something that's important to me. And there just isn't that degree of capital expenditures. It's been very hard. We invented our concept of what we call the ability curve, which takes ability and disability as a curve over your life, the x-axis being time, the y-axis being your ability to accomplish a task, and your profile can sort of be built upon what tasks can you do at a given time. But if you were to do an arc of your life, it would be kind of, you know, up and then down. But we came to that realization when people said, how big could the disabled space be? And we said, well, wait a minute, if you take arthritis, carpal tunnel, other chronic diseases, all the things associated with age. In the U.S., we came up with conservatively, just in the upper body, 114 million people. Now, if you add in sight impaired and seated people who are in wheelchair have to do something like that, it's compounded, maybe not multiples because of comorbidities and layered disability, but you're talking about a third of the population that in some way, in some time of their life, if not now, needed an adaptive product or a universally designed product. And here's the secret. Here's the part that drives me crazy when I hear it in the UK that there's less acceptance here. So when you look at something like this and it cuts well, it cuts more efficiently. Mm-hmm. If you're a able-bodied food service person, well, efficient means faster, safer, and with less fatigue. The people cutting with a traditional knife today who don't have a disability will likely be disabled tomorrow from repetitive stress. And that's where it is. It's just designing better curb ramps, You know, all this kind of stuff is just designing better. And even if somebody doesn't have a disability, if they're taking care of an aged parent or something like that, they're likely going to benefit indirectly in a ripple effect by this type of stuff. So it drives me crazy when it's such an alien concept for the general market for R&D and product development and all that.
Yeah, when I was doing some calculations on myself, in the UK, it's about, I think, 25% of the whole population has something, you know, has some sort of level of disability. And there's really, for me, I've realized the general population, it's interesting. Disabled products are thought of, normal disabled products are thought of as clinical.
Yes.
So the way you have to advertise a disabled product is to advertise it as not a disabled product, but has the benefits if you are disabled. But it's really annoying because if I can just say, this is a disabled product, it works for you, great. But if you say that, no one's going to buy it because they think it's...
Well, they think at least again, being 55 and my disability is more being driven by time and Father Time and Mother Nature winning the battle 100%. You're 100% right. Where disabled adaptive products have a look to them. They have a very clinical look. We even struggled a little bit with, is his hand will look a little bit too much that way? But I agree with you. I think there needs to be more deliberate design to make adaptive products cool. I've got a friend from who I went to West Point with who's got MS, and he tried our knife and he's like, this is great for food prep. It's also great for food consumption. He said, I ate a steak for the first time in 10 years without help, which was really meaningful to me. And he said, but if you could make a smaller one, like a personal one, that would be really cool. And with that, it got me thinking, like, that's something someone will bring to a restaurant and take out when they want to eat at a restaurant and have a dining experience, an independent dining experience. I want to make that knife so beautiful that people look over and say, wow, right? Not like, wow, functionally, but I want to make it beautiful. I want to make it smartly designed. Yeah. With this, what's really interesting is what got us off course was the homesteading and outdoor industry kept saying that would be great for skinning a deer. I've never skinned a deer, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other. And it does work well for that. Mm. But that just is verification and proof that a good design, it doesn't just help people who are disabled. It helps everybody on a task when efficiency is something that you want. So, you know, all of this stuff, I think that the sooner that we accept humanity as fragile, right, the sooner that we can accept everybody who falls under this heretofore definition of disability. And the sooner that there's some podcasters out there whose messaging is very interesting. Their messaging is, you're 1 second away from being me. And one guy's in a wheelchair, he's paralyzed. And if that was the overall global thought about ability and disability, people would hedge their bets and say, yeah, we need more of this. Because you don't get to pick when it happens either. So this is where I just have not understood embracing it. And I do think it's just a paradigm people have to get past. Go ahead.
I think it's because they're never going to say, that's going to happen to me. They don't want to say that's going to happen. Even if it's, you know, one bad accident away, their mindset is, okay, but it'll happen to someone else. It's not going to happen to me. So why should I worry about it? But then when it does happen to them, it turns your whole life upside down because you have to rethink basically your day-to-day life completely. But then it's also going out, like you were saying about the restaurants. At the moment, yes, I have my knife that I can use at home. It looks very medical, but okay, it works. But if I want to go out to a restaurant, to a hotel, suddenly I cannot cut my own food.
Right. Yeah. And it's something so small. It's this infinitesimal thing, but it's not either, right? It gets down again to creating every stress and everything around those experiences when there need not be stress about that. Like the thing about a traditional knife, and I have one here that was the guy who taught me how to make knives. This design is only, and I love that this is sort of a primitive looking knife, because this is only required if you got to hunt your food or defend yourself and then cut your food. We got rid of the tip because you don't need it. But the connection to this, this looks like, you know, it could have been made thousands of years ago, but this is what made us, this is what gave us civilization to some degree. And that's hard to give up, to say, we're going to make this radical shift as a species to thinking about things better that way. It's just different than how we think. And I love what you said about people not wanting to think about it affecting them. Because the reality of that is, that's why insurance is hard to sell. That's why when negative things happen, people continue to fool themselves until the point where they can no longer, that they all of a sudden embrace concepts that they should have been embracing all along. And I used to be a disaster preparedness guy. I had a side business, and the business failed, and the business failed because of the phenomenon that you're talking about. And that phenomenon is, the normal run-of-the-mill person cannot walk through life thinking about that every day. Like, oh, something could happen, I have to think that way. I think I'm unique in that regard. I know other people that way, a lot of them in the prepping community, of it's freedom to think every day like that could happen and say, I am making conscious moves to accept the fact that today is today and tomorrow could be completely different under different circumstances and variables and everything else. And many of them could be negative. And as I age, they will be negative. That most people can't deal with that. That to them is negative as opposed to more broad.
It's too much. They don't want to process it. But then as soon as it happens to them, then they have to process the whole thing all at once. And then
I'll take it one step further.
Very overwhelming.
It's not even that. It's when it happens to them, they say, where's all the adaptive products? I can't open this door. And I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. What the heck's going on? And that's what drives me crazy, is the personalization only when it is personal, as opposed to saying, and 25% is probably a good number, because we came up with about 30% in the US, but we also came with it where people who don't define themselves as disabled and just say, oh, I've got some arthritis issues. I got news for you. That's called disabled, yeah. Right? So now when you look and you say, okay, it's probably more like 35% of the population anywhere has some degree of temporary or permanent issues, not including children who I would argue are functionally disabled for adult tasks. And if we think that way, we can actually teach children adult tasks sooner if we find ways to have them be stronger, more coordinated, and more dexterous. So it just, when I look at that and say, okay, if you say 35% of the population, you know somebody, 100% sure, at least one, probably more, who would benefit from more conscious and deliberate universal design in the adaptive space. So you would think that would be enough incentive.
I think it's the product, because the good products are designed by people trying to solve an issue for themselves.
Right, right.
They've outlined an issue and then they've solved it for themselves, and then they think, okay, like yourself, other people are going to benefit from this product because it benefited me. But you have to have the right mind for it.
Yeah.
You have to have an entrepreneurial mind. You have to have a creative mind.
Oh, no, totally. But although I think we're at a very interesting time in where the ability to leverage the innovation of the disabled community may be at an inflection point, because you've got AI, you've got very simple means like 3D printers, and a lot of inexpensive products out there, or access to them, to be able to do things like prototyping, to do things like modeling. So where it would have had to have been a large organization with a lot of resources in the past to be able to do this kind of development, I think now we can do more. It's whether we want to. So I second only to my soldiers when I was in the Army who could solve problems with very few resources. The disabled community creates what could be commercializable products out of duct tape, PVC, pool noodles, you know, the innovation, and they're solving problems for themselves. There are even some out there who are very selflessly 3D printing designs for people and doing stuff like that. But I think if we could find a way to harness that innovation that comes from direct need, we could come up with some amazing products. And I always say to any entrepreneur, because I have moved forward to where I am now with the help and on the shoulders of others who took the time to help me, I would love to help anybody, even if it's just, what do you think? And all this, of like all this, the dialogue that we're doing right now, to a point of saying, hey, maybe I can make an introduction. But I think that it's a brother and sisterhood that knows how innovative we all are. It takes people like me who say, okay, I've gotten a product commercialized. We're making revenue. We're not revenue positive yet, but we're a year in. But then I owe it to those who are supporting my endeavor, who buy my product. I owe that to the other people who would potentially help us. I owe it to the people who I can help. I had that reversed. But I think there needs to be more of that. I think there need to be more people who are designing for themselves, who then, if it's something that is like, oh my goodness, this is a broader product, we should be putting a ton of resources behind that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the person, you have to be selfish right at the beginning,
yeah.
Solve your own problems, and then from there, develop the product. So if you're going to give a tip or a trick to someone who's listening to this podcast right now, what would you say if they're right in front of you? What would you say to them?
I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of the question.
If someone was listening to this podcast right now, what tip or trick would you give them to really help them?
If they wanted to commercialize a product?
Yeah.
Find guys like me and talk to as many people as you can, because most entrepreneurs are busy with what they're working on, which means they're not going to steal your idea. And I think in the community that we're talking about, the disabled community, your chance of idea theft are pretty limited, but help people refine your idea to where it's more commercializable. Help people get outside of that space where you invented it and help them let you grow. Find co-founders, find other people for whom that product is relevant, and see if you can build a team around it. But really, don't give up. You know, I think that I try not to view the world through my perspective, because I think differently than other people. I've been through, you know, gone through the military. Now I'm disabled. Now I have a certain skill set. So my skill set is unique. And my not taking mediocrity in cutting as okay is just who I am. But I think if people can channel some of that and say, well, wait a minute, I'm using this product every day. Oh, another thing I would say is get it out to the people who use it. make some prototypes and get some feedback. We originally, with this, we used non-hardenable steel and a 3D printed handle and sent it out to people to try. But what's great about the disabled community is they're so thirsting for products that it's okay to have a 90 or even a 60% solution for your prototype.
Because when I first, when the people I know and myself included, it's also we have very strong brand, you know, loyalties. Because if we find a product that works, we're going to use that product until it disintegrates. Right. And then we're going to purchase the same product because it solves the problem we've been having since we were 1 year old.
Totally.
So I always think it's worth the initial investment from yourself, because you know, then you've basically got
it's interesting, because you would think that a large knife brand, in an effort to differentiate, would look and say, wow, we can take what we know about making knives and what styling works and use our economy of scale in raw materials and all of that, but we can design a cool knife and make a market. And really, these people with brand loyalty, as they start to lose their ability to use a traditional knife, guess where they're buying their knife, right? They're buying it from the company that they had this brand loyalty with. So I don't know what the barrier is to that. And I think it's just, again, it kind of goes full circle back to feeling that you're using a product like that makes you lesser of a person than you were before, or lesser of a person in the eyes of others. And that's why that's why they end up looking more clinical and all that, right? So, you know, it's very interesting that your experience in the UK in a very, very different environment is so parallel and like in so many ways what I think people see here on a regular basis too.
So, I mean, let's wrap this up, because I agree with you on basically everything that you've said, that it's all about, you know, driving yourself forward, being selfish, but then creating something that everyone can use, whether they're disabled or even when they're not disabled, because they will eventually have a use for it. What are you looking forward to in the next year or two?
Great question. Big thing is our product roadmap. As I said, we're actively designing a personal use version that uses the same circular geometry so that people can go to a restaurant and enjoy a meal. And then in 2026, we also anticipate our adaptive cutting board. We're in prototyping stage right now, and it's typical, holds the food in place. So for somebody who doesn't have bilateral use, especially, are more able to use our knife in a cutting system. Where we're trying to get, and I hope 2026 will be the year for that, is moving to that cutting system. Right now, we're a knife, and I feel we're the best adaptive knife on the market, but it's an incomplete solution for people, and that's where we want to grow it. We also want to be cash flow positive. We're generally right now building our sales, but it's a unique product that people don't know they're looking for it. So the echo of what we've been talking about on the development side exists on the sales side, where you have a world driven by keywords and search criteria and all that. If people don't know what they're looking for and the benefits of our product are not widely known, then things like Amazon are really hard to differentiate in, because Amazon is built in volume. So what they do is they sort of aggregate search terms in a certain way. They don't even have adaptive knives as a category. So the largest e-commerce platform, you know, probably in the US, but maybe on the globe, doesn't have a mechanism for, at least in the US, 114, if not more, people, 114 million people may be looking for this product, and their system is not meant to do that. So we hope to grow our sales but grow it in a way where we're creating a market that we can dominate because nobody else has figured out that there's a place for well-designed adaptive products that don't look like torture devices.
Well, that is something that I completely agree on. And yes, it's even more sporadic over here because, yeah, we have the Amazon over here, but the Amazon has the same problem.
Right.
I think the algorithms work against us because if no one knows about the product, you don't know what to search.
Totally. Totally.
And the normal searches just don't bring up anything. So it's really, it's a battle to find the right products. So thank you, Douglas, for coming on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it. I will put all the links to everything that you want in the show notes. So yes, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. And I got to figure out more about this value added tax thing. No, Guido, because one of the challenges that we have on export is exactly that, right? Like our product is, it's not the cheapest knife out there. There's reasons for that. But the import-export thing has been a real challenge because of all the back and forth. And that may be an interesting thing. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you for listening to the Disability Podcast. Anything that you heard during the show will be linked in the show notes, including where to get more information about our guest, our Lunar Life newsletter, or anything else that you may find interesting. If you want to know anything more, leave us a comment. Please follow our Instagram, message us on LinkedIn, all of which also will be in the show notes. We hope to see you again next week. Thank you for listening.